You are listening to the Streets MN Podcast, a place where conversations about Minnesota's transportation and land use are expanded through research and informed commentary.
Hi, this is Bill Endicke. The podcast this week is a special one. Just like we did 4 years ago, Streets.mn co-hosted a forum with candidates running to be the mayor of Minneapolis, which is sort of a big job. This is a recording of that hour and a half long conversation, which was moderated by Freddie Bell, who is the head of KMOJ, the People's Station, an awesome radio station, and features four candidates for mayor who came this time. There were more people invited, but the people that actually were there were Raymond Dean, Jacob Fry, Tom Hoke, and Betsy Hodges. The latter, Betsy Hodges, is the current mayor of Minneapolis, as you probably know. The four of them discussed and debated some issues around the theme of equitable and sustainable transportation and what that'll look like in the future of Minneapolis. They were on stage at the Old Bell Museum on the University of Minnesota campus. It was a really good conversation. I hope you enjoy it. There is a caveat, though, which is that the recording is not as good as the one that was 4 years ago because I could not find like that little jack where you can stick in your microphone and get the direct audio feed. So I had to improvise and use the microphones that I had brought. And that means that it's not the best audio quality, but you know, it's better than nothing. And so I thought I would put this out there before the election, with a few days before the election, just so people can, if they want to know more about how the different candidates that were there, what they say about transportation issues and how well they're able to answer tough questions on their feet and get at the details of some of the tricky political and policy issues around transportation, parking, transit, walking, equitable, social justice-oriented decision-making on the streets and funding of those things. That's kind of the themes. So anyway, here you go. Enjoy this mayoral forum, and I hope you do go and vote if you live in Minneapolis, or St. Paul, vote there too. Yeah, enjoy this. Before we go right to it, though, consider donating to Streets.mn, please. Streets.mn is a website that's dedicated to expanding the conversation about land use and transportation issues in the Twin Cities and in greater Minnesota and in Minneapolis also. If you are a fan of Streets.mn or appreciate the kinds of conversations that it brings into the public attention, like this conversation, please support the website with a donation. You can find the big blue donation button on the top of the main page, and your donation will help keep the site afloat and thriving. It'll help pay for events, web hosting, and other expenses that we do incur. And so it's all for a good cause. It's just we don't really waste any money because we don't have anyone who gets paid for anything. So you know that your money is going to directly help advocate and push for better conversations around our streets and our cities, and that's important. So I think that's a good use of your dollars if you have some dollars. So just consider the blue button and giving us a little cheddar. Thank you in advance. If you have, thanks to Dan Choma for writing the intro music and producing it. And also thanks to the co-sponsors of the forum. I'm not going to get all their names. They're listed by Freddie Bell when he does his introduction, but it was includes the AARP, TLC Smart Trips, definitely Our Streets Minneapolis, and University of Minnesota's Urban Studies Association, Alliance for Metropolitan Stability, and I think that's it, but I think I'm missing one. So anyway, thanks to them. They did most of the work. All I did is just show up and record the thing and maybe nudge a few conversations a little bit around it. But yeah, so this is fun, and it's good election fodder for anyone, and here it is for posterity's sake, the mayoral 2017 debate on transportation.
Four.
I don't know if I'm big enough for a capital letter.
Am I cut enough?
Oh, four. I get it.
And
you're a capital letter to me. I'll give you the four.
Sorry. One, two.
Double two.
afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our cannabis forum, specifically talking about transportation and transportation equity. I'll be your moderator this afternoon. I'm Freddie Bell. I'm the general manager for the People Station, KMOJ FM, and the ICE on 899-82. We're expecting to have a great debate this afternoon, or questions and answers, however it unfolds. And we'll try to encapsulate the concerns and the questions concerning transportation and equitable and sustainable transportation in communities. I was just speaking with one of the candidates, and I will take complete ownership. You're in the magnificent Bell Museum, and I am Fred Bell. Please welcome to our stage today, and I'll say all the names we've invited. Raymond Dean. Al Flowers, I have not seen him yet, but he will join him if he arrives. Jacob Fry. Please welcome Tom Hoke. Betsy Hodges. Also invited, Nakima Levy Pounds, and Answar Rahman also was invited and not able to attend this afternoon. Our co-hosts for this afternoon's forum include AARP Minnesota, the American Heart Association, Minneapolis High Rise Representative Council Active Living Committee, Our Streets Minneapolis, Streets.mn, the Alliance, TLC Smart Trips, Minnesota Urban Studies Student Association. Please acknowledge all of our co-hosts for this afternoon. We do have planned questions for you this afternoon to our candidates. We also have a timekeeper. We are trying to, and we will, stay to the time as best we can, and we will allow for back and forth where it dictates that we shall. And as we go through, to set the stage for our conversation this afternoon on transportation, in 2018, the city will begin work to update its Access Minneapolis Transportation Plan, which guides transportation priorities and policies in Minneapolis. In the next 4 years, the city also plans to update its pedestrian master plan and bicycle master plan. The city is working now to update the ADA transition plan to evaluate access for people with disabilities and prioritize improvements. The city reconstructs approximately 150 to 200 curb ramps each construction season to bring those ramps into compliance with ADA standards. Also, with regard to street maintenance, recognizing that street conditions could deteriorate to poor without additional investment, the city last year passed a plan that provides an additional $21.2 million a year for 20 years for street maintenance, along with additional resources for parks maintenance. The city's 20-year streets funding plan used equity and complete streets criteria, along with pavement conditions, to prioritize 46 miles of streets for reconstruction. And also with regard to traffic safety, over the last 10 years, an average of more than 10 people have been killed in traffic-related crashes and more than 2,000 injured. This fall, the city set a Vision Zero goal to eliminate traffic-related deaths and serious injuries by the year 2027. The city also plans to start engaging communities in 2018 to create a data-driven action plan for improving street safety. Ladies and gentlemen, with that as a backdrop, we'll ask our first question. As we mentioned, we have timekeepers in front. We'll try to keep these questions and answers to 90 seconds. If there's a need for a rebuttal, we'll try to acknowledge that. And the first question, in alphabetical order, will go to Raymond Dean first. So, as I mentioned, complete streets, Raymond. Mm-hmm. In 2016, the city of Minneapolis adopted a complete streets policy, which states, quoting, that Minneapolis is committed to rebalancing its transportation network by clearly prioritizing walking, taking transit and biking over driving motorized vehicles in a manner that provides for acceptable levels of service for all modes. Ray, what's your vision for Minneapolis and how does transportation intersect with it?
Well, thank you, and I'm happy to be here with all of you. With an election just 10 days away now, it's getting to the point where I think most folks are starting to make their decisions on who they're going to vote for. So I think that addressing the issue of transit is something critical. The city's Complete Streets program, I think, is something that's really, really important, not just because of how we prioritize pedestrian, bikes, transit over automobiles, but also how it really makes us think about how we design our neighborhoods and we design our communities. Ultimately, the best transit system you have is one in which people don't need to use the transit system. In other words, they're living close to all the amenities that they need, and generally they're able to walk. But short of that, we know that people having access to bike to work or to recreation, as well as access to good, reliable public transit, which, you know, Minneapolis doesn't do all that well with. We have many, many pockets in our city that aren't served well by transit, and oftentimes a short trip that you would think would be able to get you 5-6 blocks away from where you live is now taking you 45 minutes because you have to go downtown to get on a different bus to go to that other place. So how we actually design our systems are going to be really, really important. I would hope that as we begin to look at Complete Streets, that we begin to actually prioritize those parts of the city that currently, one, aren't served well by transit, and two, also aren't designed in a way so that individuals actually have things to walk to and things to ride their bike to. The healthiest communities are those where people do get out and walk. They are communities where people do take the bus. And those are the types of things when I think about the city of Minneapolis moving forward with a Complete Streets program. So,
thank you, Ray. And Jacob, same question. What's your vision for Minneapolis and how does transportation intersect, so to speak, with it?
Well, first, thank you for having me and hosting the forum. My name is Jacob Fry. I'm the Third Ward City Council member and a civil rights attorney, and I'm really proud to be here. So we right now have to be moving away from what was the Eisenhower administration vision, the whole American dream back in the 1950s, where the whole concept was you have your white picket fence in the suburbs with like a 45-minute commute to work, and you drive everywhere, and once you get there, you park. We are moving away from that in a big way right now. Right now, people want to live in a dense and vibrant atmosphere. They want to live in diverse communities. They want to have contact with their neighbors, live within proximity of public realm improvements, the riverfront or the lakes. And yeah, you know, there are a lot of people right now that don't want to own a car. I'll say it again, they don't want to own a car. They want to get from point A to point B with as few hurdles as possible. And the way ultimately we do that and expand out both our pedestrian and bike and public transportation system is by focusing on affordability, accessibility, and reliability. You can't get away from those three topics. You have to be focusing on them in all transportation decisions that you make. Now, I'm someone that has, in the last 2-3 years, has made the transition to where right now about 80 to 90% of my trips are via bike or walking. And I understand that not everybody can or is able to make that transition, but it's been, for me, it's been transformational. You know, I've had additional contact with the community. You're a part of the city in which you're living. You don't have the stressors of parking, which is one of the most stressful things in the world right now. And we're moving away from that. And I think the city is in a position to embrace it, to build out public transportation improvements, and then also to plan for the future. And I'm sure we'll get expansively into them now, but I just appreciate being here, and I am asking for your first choice vote.
And I thank our candidates so far for adhering to the time. And now, Tom Hope,
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Tom Hoke, and most recently I was the president of Hennepin Theater Trust, so I oversaw the State Orphan and Pantages Theaters in downtown Minneapolis. And appreciate the opportunity to talk with you about this important topic today. I fell in love with the Complete Streets policy, and I commend the city for it because I think it's really excellent. When I was looking at the initial phases of the reconstruction of Hennepin Avenue, that's going to be reconstructed between Washington and about 12th Street in 2020. So we had the opportunity to begin to think about what would that be like, a street that has historically been about vehicles, and now we begin to design it from the building face out to the middle of the street. And it was a fascinating conversation. You know, we are going to have a completely transformed street once we're done. But I think one of the opportunities as we begin to go through transformation is to really begin to think about how we can bring the entire community along as part of the conversation. Because when we don't, we tend to hear from people that they don't know what's going on and they feel like something is being done to them rather than with them or for them. So we want to make sure that we have individuals engaged all along through the conversation. And I say that because while I'm a biker, I have been in some, all of us have been in living rooms across the city, you know, over the course of the summer, and a lot of individuals express to me their support for bike lanes, but they don't understand how it happened, why that bike lane, why there. And I understand from the standpoint that they don't feel like they were fully engaged. And we want to make sure that we have individuals fully engaged in all of the conversations that we're having here, because otherwise there's a backlash and we don't have everybody fully engaged in the conversation. So I want you to know that that's an area of focus for me. I completely support that policy, but we really need to take the time to make sure that we are bringing everyone along with us so that everyone feels that it is something that they're invested in.
Thank you, Tom. And Bessie, how did your vision for Minneapolis and how transportation works with that?
Well, thank you so much. And I'm Betsy Hodges. I am the mayor of Minneapolis, and I'm running for a second term. And if we build cities for cars and traffic, we will get cities full of cars and traffic. If we build cities for people, if we build cities for experiences, if we build cities for life, the entire life cycle, then we will get cities that have people in them, that have vibrant experiences, and are places that people want to be for an entire lifetime. And so what you'll hear tonight on stage as we talk about this, the vision that I have is about, and it has been always, is about our growth, is about equity, and is about getting the basics right. And transit is at the heart of all of that. How we grow matters. People don't object to the density of people. They object to the density of cars. We put equity at the heart of it. We are one of two cities in the country that has equity at the heart of our public works capital plan and our 20-year street investment plan. And what you'll also get tonight is the difference between rhetoric and results. I have been doing this work certainly for the last 4 years as mayor, for 8 years as a city council member before that, to get real results. So Streets 3.0, yes, we now have a complete streets plan, and I'm proud of the role that I helped play to bring that to Minneapolis. I have fought for transit and transportation at the Capitol, at the federal level, and here in the city. I have proposed for next year Vision Zero so that we can make sure that we have no fatalities set as our goal, and we invest in that. And as we invest in our 20-year streets investment plan, our parks and streets investment plan, it will be to that complete streets policy, which has pedestrians and people with disabilities in the first order position, then cyclists and transit users, and then we have cars, because then we are building a city for people, we are building for experience, we are building for a lifetime. And that is the vision that I have for transit and transportation in Minneapolis. And I have a proven record of results on that vision for the last 12 years, for the past 4 years. And I will work with you and all of you to bring results even further as we invest in our system from here on out. And as a result, I ask for your first choice vote on November 7th, or if you vote early, then. If I don't have your first choice vote, I ask for your second. If I don't have your second choice vote, I ask for your third. But honestly, I'm the best one, so please vote for me first choice.
Thank you all for the first round of answers to our question. And we do remind you that we are live streaming on Facebook this afternoon. Mayor, if you keep that microphone, we'd like to go to the second question, and this involves public engagement. And we understand that it is important portion of shaping the city's transportation network. And as mayor, how would you approach community engagement on street and certain transportation projects.
One of the things that I'm really proud of that has happened since I've been mayor is it's important to make sure that everybody we have the conversation, we have the communication, we engage people as we talk about how we're going to build out neighborhoods, understanding that not everybody shares the same vision for the future. And so one of the things I'm proud of as mayor, under my watch, I proposed in a budget and the council approved a transportation planning division in our public works department to enhance the communication and the work with neighborhoods, with local organizations, with groups, to make sure that as we move forward, particularly on cycling and pedestrian efforts, which often face a lot of pushback, you know, people get afraid that if you're investing in cyclists and pedestrian efforts, that somehow, you know, cyclists and pedestrians are more important. Actually, cyclists and pedestrians are just more vulnerable. And safety has been at the forefront of the decisions that we've made as a city in, you know, I hope always, but certainly since I've been here, decisions are made about safety. And the great news is those are all decisions that help build a great city. So the Transportation Planning Division has been a really important method through which we have increased our interaction and our participation. Also, support for neighborhood organizations is vital because they are important conduits to neighbors and to residents. And then working with partnerships that we have with all kinds of organizations, including the many sponsors here today, thank you very much for sponsoring this and for the partnership with the city on getting word out and working with people to advocate for a common and shared vision for a joint future for Minneapolis.
Thank you, Mayor. Tom, the same question to you as mayor. How would you approach, sir, the community engagement piece on street and transportation projects?
That's really a great question, and I appreciate the opportunity to respond to it. Let me tell you how I think we could go about community engagement. I am not entirely convinced that engineers are the best vehicle for engagement around what should happen on the street. So when I think about what we could do and what I've proposed for Hennepin Avenue, the street that I was just talking about, but it applies to any street anywhere, is to actually ask artists, our local artists, to come forward and lead the community engagement. When I think about, for instance, tearing up a street and what happens, you know, we can have that be something that people feel is being done to them, or we can engage them in the process. And what if the street gets torn up and there's sand there for a week and we turn it into a volleyball court, or there's plywood that's going to go up and we have the community participate in making a mural, whatever that would be. Because what we want these streets to be more active, and we want our community to feel a sense of ownership in them. And what we can do is have people begin to mimic exactly the kind of behavior that we want them to express once the project is done. So when I think about the community engagement piece, certainly working with neighborhoods and our streets and other organizations, but I think we could have artists take the lead, be creative, and we actually might come up with a much better project as a result. So that's exactly how I would go about doing that.
Thank you, Tom. Jacob Fry, how would you approach it as mayor? Different projects,
well, I'm for engagement. There's not a single person up here that's going to be against engagement, but I'll tell you what I'm against. I'm against fake engagement where the decision is already made ahead of time before the engagement process begins. If we're actually going to ask for input, we need to consider it and then, in some instances, incorporate it into the end result. Now, that doesn't mean at the end of the day that we're all going to agree, because especially with these issues of transportation, we won't. You know, as things change, it's kind of funny. The only thing that people hate worse than the status quo is any change at all. And in many instances here, yeah, we do need change. You know, if we are going to become a more pedestrian-oriented city, there's a few things that we need to change, and those are going to be difficult. The first is density. We need to grow the city. You're never going to, if you're not going to be able to grow density, to stand up for that and be very clear, we'll never be a fully pedestrian-oriented city. And by the way, I've pushed for it. About half of the total growth in the entire city has happened in the ward I represent. And sometimes it's been difficult, but we've built out the coalition, involved neighborhood associations, residents, the developers, workers, you name it. And ultimately, we've got the results to show for it. Second, obviously, is transportation.
And as you incorporate additional bike lanes that are protected, as you expand out the sidewalks, in some instances there is a zero-sum game. And so there are hard decisions that have to be made there, but you need to make sure that everybody has the evidence along the process. And we've done that with Washington, which I was an advocate for. The Washington downtown has got this nearly Champs-Élysées-type boulevard now. I'm exaggerating a little bit. We've got Plymouth, which we incorporated a protected bike lane connecting both north and northeast. And then finally, with the East River Trail, one of my campaign promises is that we would create a fully connected east side of the river. And we didn't just talk about it. We pushed back on a couple of entities that were trying to prevent an easement from going through, and we made it happen. And now we've got this beautiful, connected, fully east side of the river trail. Next up, we need to be looking at Granary Corridor. Next up, we need to be having the Greenway extend to St. Paul. Next up, we need to be looking at finishing off the Grand Rounds. And these are things that we can do as a city. We just need to make it happen.
I have to follow up on that question. You said faith engagement, but you didn't mention how we engage.
No, that's a good point. So in engaging the community, how much longer do I have to answer this part? All right. So I'll give you an example. When we were incorporating the Plymouth Avenue to, I guess it's 7th Avenue there, or 8th Avenue, protected bike lane, there are two businesses that are along that corridor. One of them is Elsie's, and the other one is the Yacht Club. And when we engaged them, their first reaction was absolutely no. I'll be honest, they weren't thrilled with it even towards the end of the process, but we did accommodate several of their requests. Namely, they needed to be able to get their truck close to the loading dock to unload beer and food. That's reasonable. I think that's something that we should be looking at accommodating, and so when we're engaging with them, it's not this fake engagement, we're actually incorporating their concerns. Additionally, we tackled the issue of parking in certain areas, so it wasn't this total loss that we were able to compromise.
All right, thank you very much. And to bring the same question, what's your approach to become mayor of engaging the community on street and transportation projects?
Well, my engagement will be similar to what it has been. I have the good fortune of being one of the co-facilitators for the Northside Transportation Network that actually looked at the alignment of what was then called the Bottineau Transitway. And we spent 18 months having community meetings, connecting with people, and meeting them in the community. These weren't meetings that took place at City Hall. These weren't meetings that took place at the Met Council. These were meetings that took place in the community. And you know, when you go through a long process like that, you also have new people coming in all the time. So you often, at every meeting, you have to start from zero and try to get people up to speed really quick. And in the end, that was a process where we spent a lot of time of engaging the community, and ultimately the community still remained split. And whenever you have a community that is split, then it falls on elected officials to make decisions regarding that. I'm really glad that Jacob brought up what I remember being called Washington Boulevard, because I was part of the mayor's great city design teams that actually worked with the businesses, that worked with the people that lived in the area of Washington Avenue, on how we could envision something that was really a sort of a back lane through the city where most industrial vehicles would travel. And now that's an area where it's safe for pedestrians, bikes. We've greened it. It's really an area now that is a feature for the city and not just an area just for trucks and cars to travel through. So you know, I you know, community engagement is a key piece of anything we do. And when we're coming to people for the first time around issues, we have to understand that, you know, many of the engineers and other people that have been looking at a project have done some research and that understanding. And we really need to start at a level that they can grasp and have those types of conversations and ultimately let them play a role in shaping what ends up happening with a particular project, whether it's a transitway, whether it's how we address issues of biking or pedestrian ways. Those are things that people that have to live with them day in and day out need to be engaged in that conversation.
So we've talked about the big picture so far. Look a little bit about public engagement. Let's move on now to funding issues. So if you have a project, you have to have a way, or you think you should have a way to pay for this. So if you keep the microphone there, an agreement on a comprehensive state transportation deal is challenges the lack of funding for expanded transit. In 2017, Hennepin County adopted a 0.5% sales tax, which was focused on transitway investments like the Southwest Bosco Light Rail Transit Line, as has been mentioned, and also the Orange Line Bus Rapid Transit Line. A world-class transportation network requires funding at the city, the county, regional, and at the state level. What would be your approach and priorities for transportation funding today?
Well, it's definitely all three of those, because no one is going to do it. At the state capitol, I've been fighting at the state capitol to make sure that cities like Minneapolis and the region have actual funding for its needs. And, you know, Hennepin County has, for the past several years, been looking at funding transit at the county level. I could get in the weeds about CTIB and how that's no longer a part of the structure. But the county has taken initiative because in this political climate, there are lawmakers that decide what type of funding goes where, and they believe that public transit isn't important to the metro area. So continuing to advocate at the Capitol is something that I think that the next mayor will need to do. And it goes beyond just issues of transit. It's also roads, making sure that there are local funding for the assistance for those roads. And understanding how things are structured at the state level is really, really critical. This year, we were able to move forward and get the funding for the 10th Avenue Bridge, which up until last week, it seemed like it was not going to be part of the project. But that's where working and working and working till the end is really, really critical. Now, I've talked to many Republican legislators that are fine with a 5-cent state gasoline tax increase because they know they need it for their roads as well. Unfortunately, in this climate, gas tax is bad. And so anything that actually brings more funding to not just roads in the metro area, but also transit in the metro area, is something that we have to stand up and we have to continue to fight for. You know, when I think about what we're going to do at the Minneapolis level, I think it's really important that we consider those communities that roads have been underfunded in the past and make sure that we are putting that funding in the place where it hasn't been for a long, long time. So those are some of my thoughts about funding. It's not going to be one thing. It's got to be several things, and we need to continue to work towards all of those areas of funding.
Thank you. David, same question without going through the background. We're talking about approach and priorities for funding for transportation. How would you address those two aspects of it?
Just so I understand the question properly, you're saying
what would be your approach
to funding projects?
And priorities for transportation funding.
Like where the funding should go.
I'll let you characterize it.
Okay. Well, to be a world-class city, you need a world-class transportation system, and right now we fall dramatically short. Whether that's in the form of light rail improvements, bus rapid transit, which I think we need to be taking advantage of way more than we are right now, or pedestrian and bike friendliness. It goes a long way. And as Ray mentioned, we do rely substantially on funding from other jurisdictions. We need to be lobbying more at the state, and thank you for your help there, Representative Dean. We need to be working collaboratively with the county that now has the sales tax ability. And with the absence of CTIP, there is a big potential to move forward significantly there. And yes, you know, we are also investing as a city. You know, $6.1 million alone have been invested in the combination of bike and pedestrian outlays, and obviously we've incorporated a substantial amount of money, $20 million on an annual basis into streets. And so we can move a lot further there, and as far as the specifics go, I think we need to be looking at how people move and how they get around. I think about my great aunt Lolita, who, you know, lived to be 100 years old, lived on her own for the last 10 years of life, and lived in New York City. And the reason she was able to do so is she had quick access to the subway. She was able to get on the subway and get something to eat, go to the airport, get to her work. I mean, she could do anything she wanted. She was 100 years old. You know, we need to be, and there's value in having people who are disabled or who are elderly able to get to transportation options. And yes, the city is just a gigantic part of that. And so as far as the funding goes, obviously the city is not going to be able to go it alone. When you talk about $6 million, $10 million, $20 million, that doesn't even begin to scratch the surface in terms of what we need for outlays for incorporation of our public transit system and light rail system. I mean, light rail is many, many hundreds of millions and billions. And it's not just going to be done by the city, but it's going to take working with other jurisdictional partners. And that's why you need to be able to have a mayor that's going to be very clear and concise and be able to build out a broad coalition to get it done.
Thank you very much. And Todd, what would be your approach and priorities?
Sure. So the way that I'd approach this is to try to create the biggest footprint I could for those who would be engaged. So whether it's the county or the state preferably, because as Jacob was just saying, this isn't something that the city can solve on its own. So trying to figure out what the biggest footprint would be. My clear preference would be, of course, to go to the state to make sure that the state is an active participant. So what does that look like? How do we do that? How do we pull people together to go make that case? Because that's what we have to do. We have to go make our case. A couple of years ago, as the chair of the Downtown Council, I worked hard to get the business community on board with the notion of a long-term transportation policy. Now, they weren't immediately ready to be there because, of course, they were thinking about taxes. But once they began to really think about how this impacted the economic development prospects for the state of Minnesota, when they started to think about jobs, when they started to think about how they were going to recruit people, how those people that they recruited were going to move around town, they began to understand the importance of long-term transportation funding. Now, when you do that, do you get everything you want and do you get some things that you don't really want? Yeah, there's probably some of that, but it's important that we understand that we've got to bring lots of people together so that we can be effective at the legislature, because that's really where we need to be looking. And if we don't pull people together, no one will hear us. So my goal is to create a big footprint, bring as many people together, be clear about what it is we need, what our values are, and then move forward.
Thank you, Tom. Mayor, the same question. What would be your approach for the change in your case going into 2000 to your next term, should you be elected? What would be your approach and your priorities for transportation funding?
Well, funding for transportation has been something I've been fighting for a long time. And there's part of this answer that is, and to the extent that we do it on our own, we do, and the 20-year investment plan in streets and parks is an example of that. But this is another example of rhetoric versus results. I have been fighting for transportation funding, and specifically for BRT funding, for a long time. And so I'm fascinated to hear Councilmember Frye say we need to do more on BRT. As a council member, he's had a lot of time to say that. And I've been fighting for BRT funding since before he moved to Minnesota. Because Councilmember Glidden, Councilmember Lilligren, and I led the way. When the municipal consent for 35W redesign was on the table, we refused to grant it until BRT was accounted for. And then over the course of the last couple years, I have been working with a coalition of partners from around the state and helping create an urban and suburban coalition to make sure that the Orange Line BRT was completely funded. And to add to that, we as a city would not give the okay to the Botineau LRT line until Metro Transit prioritized the C and D BRT lines, meaning Penn over North and Emerson, Fremont, and Chicago throughout the entire city. So you deploy the strategies that you can at hand. You build the coalitions that you need around the region and around the state. You stand, but sometimes it just means standing up and taking a tough stance and taking a tough vote until you make sure the right thing happens. And you got to have the judgment to know which to do what, and I think these successes speak for themselves. But it's also true that how we invest in our own streets here at home is not reliant on the federal government or the state government. And so when there was a plan afoot to fund neighborhood parks in Minneapolis, I totally support the funding for neighborhood parks. I did at the time. But once it became a plan for city and city taxes, I said, I will not support this until we have a plan for streets. I had to veto a park action twice, until the streets are included, until we have a real plan for funding them, not 3 years of one-time dollars and then a smoke and mirror plan for 17 years after that, but a real plan and a real commitment for real dollars for our streets. I insisted on that, and that's what we have, which is why we're going to spend 20 years building out to our complete streets policy.
Thank you very much. Before we leave this topic, there was a statement leveled directly at Jacob Frost. We'll give you 30 seconds, if you wish, to respond to the statement by Mayor Hodges.
Well, Mayor Hodges is correct. I did not grow up here. I grew up on the East Coast, but when you grow up in another city, it also helps you to see what those cities can offer and how those transportation options differ. I have been an advocate of BRT, and I'm proud of that. Mayor Hodges has been an advocate of BRT, and I compliment her for that. I don't think it's necessary to, you know, try and one-up each other on this. We're all for BRT. At the end of the day, though, we also need to figure out where the dollars are going to go and how they're going to be spent. And I'll tell you right now, we still have a substantial amount of money that's being set aside into, you know, some form of streetcar program. And while streetcar sounds great and fine and dandy, the reality is that it's stagnant, and a lot of the areas that would have initially generated quite a bit of economic development are already developing. So I think a lot of that money would be better used if we switched over to some form of BRT transit.
We will go back to Mayor Hodges for our next question. In this regards, aging in place in the state. And I'll just share this with you. The WRP, one of our focal research, has consistently shown that the vast majority of people, roughly 80% of those who are age 45 and 90% of those who are over age 65, desire to remain in their own homes and communities as they continue to mature. Without a range of safe, accessible, dependable, and affordable transportation options, which include alternatives to driving, maybe driverless cars as an example, this will become increasingly difficult whether one lives in an urban community, a suburban community, or a rural community. Only 10% of jobs and 25% of households in the Twin Cities Metro are conveniently served by transportation, that according to the Phillips Foundation. And also, transportation is a vital link, and I apologize for the length of the question, that connects people to social activity, economic opportunity, educational institutions, healthy food, and so on. So what do you see as the biggest barrier or barriers to transportation access in Minneapolis, and how would you address that?
One of the things that we put in place in the city is a plan called Minneapolis for a Lifetime, which is giving consideration to how can we make sure that people at all stages of life can live successfully and well and thrive in the city of Minneapolis. And I'm really proud that we've partnered with the AARP on being a city for a lifetime in Minneapolis, and I appreciate that partnership. I'd say some of the barriers we're doing our best to address through the Complete Streets policy. Mobility is certainly one of them. As people age, more and more people have issues with mobility. And so some of the issues we've already talked about, transportation, transit, and transit funding, making sure that we have the most robust network that we can have. But the most likely place to get that is in the urban core and in the urban center and in Minneapolis here in our region. And so that's why it's especially important that we invest there. But the Complete Streets policy and the build-out of our streets is incredibly important, too. As I mentioned before, pedestrians and people with disabilities are in the first position when we consider design of our streets. That means that it's going to that our streets increasingly over the next 20 years, as we build them out, are going to be built for people as we age. And if it's working for people who have mobility issues, it is going to be working better for everybody, and we're going to be building the best possible city. But the other advantage about transit is it helps drive the development where you want it most. It helps drive where you can put housing and development in those transit corridors. And that itself helps increase mobility if we have housing options near our transit corridors. And then in our public works department, we've invested more in street clearing, sidewalk clearing, corner clearing of snow in the winter, because what I've heard from people from all walks of life, but particularly older people and people with disabilities, is that that is what really hampers people in the winter months, is when the streets aren't cleared, the sidewalks aren't cleared, and the corners aren't cleared. So I've invested money in the budget for that as well. So we are building a city with, when we think about people who are pedestrians and with disabilities in the first order, we're making a better city for everybody.
Thank you very much. Question goes to you, Tom, with older Americans and aging Americans as a backdrop. What do you see as the biggest barriers to transportation access in Minneapolis, and how will you address those?
Well, I'll start with winter. Winter seems to be the thing that is most difficult for particularly anyone with mobility issues, because it's so hard to get outside and walk on slippery sidewalks or to walk to a corner. I know that from talking with a number of elderly individuals that I asked them, I said, do you go downtown? And they said, I do. And I said, so what do you do when you're there? And they said, I head to the Skyway as fast as I can, because I'm afraid to be on the sidewalk. So that told me that we need to do a better job with sidewalks to make sure that sidewalks are clear and ice-free everywhere, which is a tough challenge in Minnesota, but something that we really need to take a look at. I think when I think about the needs, and I really use my elderly stepmother as sort of the, you know, my case in point, is I think if we could do a couple of things, because sometimes it's a matter of getting to her the services she needs in her house. It isn't always a matter of her getting out, and it's everything from, you know, telemedicine. You know, is she able to go ahead and contact somebody, you know, over her computer, which she has, and is she able to interface in that way? So that when she's going out, she's not spending a lot of time waiting for Metro Mobility, and then she gets there, and then she's sitting in a doctor's office, and then she's waiting, and then she gets done with her appointment, and then she's waiting again, and then she's waiting for Metro Mobility, and she gets home. And it's a full day for something that shouldn't take her that long, but rather try to direct more of her mobility activities to those that provide the socialization that she so readily needs, because, you know, going to the doctor's office isn't really socialization, but going out to play bridge, to go to, you know, a school where she reads to kids. Those are the kinds of things that she needs help with. So when I think about Minneapolis, and it is certainly different in greater Minnesota, ensuring that she has ready access to the mobility services that she needs to go participate and be an active, engaged member of society is what I think about. And when she does that, by the way, there's a return benefit to the city and to the people who live here, because when she's going to a school and she's reading to kids, that's another way for seniors to continue to be engaged, continue to be active, and continue to be fulfilled.
Thank you very much. With older Americans, aging Americans as a lens, Jacob Fry, what do you see as among the biggest barriers to transportation access in Minneapolis? What would you do to address those?
Well, we want seniors and those living with disabilities to have access and easy access to transportation. It helps in terms of commerce. We want them to be able to buy things. It helps them helps us in terms of work. We want them to be able to get to work, to volunteer opportunities, to caretaking opportunities. We talk about seniors aging in place. Well, a better word would be, you know, aging in community, because I don't want them aging in place. I want them to be highly mobile. And then we also have to look at the cost of institutionalization, the cost of being isolated from the rest of your community around you. That costs a lot of money to the state, and it's not good for anybody. It's not good for emotional or mental health either, and we still have some significant barriers to accessibility, to affordability, and to reliability. And we know that Metro Mobility right now is very expensive, and so we need to be looking at very clear solutions. And when we talk about solutions, here's the first thing we need to be looking at. We need to be looking at the first and the last mile, because it's the first and the last mile of any trip that are oftentimes the most difficult. That mile from your house to the metro or the light rail stop. That mile from the light rail stop to your work and then back. And we need to be looking even further than that for some people. We need to be looking at the first and last block, because some people, they're not going to be able to walk an entire mile. They're going to have trouble just getting a couple blocks, especially if it's snowing out. And we talk about ADA requirements, making sure that we meet these ADA requirements, and I think that's the very baseline We need to be going well beyond that, because if we're talking about true accessibility, we need to be looking at the full spectrum of any individual's trip. And it's hard to know, it's hard to understand and put yourself in somebody else's shoes if you haven't been there yourself. And so what I would advocate for is to make sure that our individuals who are in public works are taking accessibility rides and accessibility trips. So whether that's having a better understanding of how it is to get around in a wheelchair and the difficulties associated with that, how it is to get around if you're blind, it adds a whole other dimension that you may not be thinking about. And if you do have that perspective, I do think it would help us dramatically improve our transportation decisions.
Thank you very much. And the question now goes to you, Anna. What do you see as the biggest barriers to transportation, the lens being aging or rural areas, and how would you address
that? Sure. When I think about this question, I think about the individuals that are transit dependent. Those individuals that the only way that they get to and from the grocery store, the only way they get to and from where their friends are, oftentimes the only way they get to and from the doctor's office is through public transportation. And we have a great system called Metro Mobility, but it's a very, very expensive system. And at the state level, we've been not funding it at the level that it should be funded. I've talked to many seniors that are transit dependent, and they say that sometimes their driver shows up 45 minutes late. So they get to their doctor appointment a half an hour later than they were supposed to, and all of a sudden the doctor can't see them. So now they wait, they go back, and they have to reschedule it. I mean, this is a type of system that, you know, I'm not the most technological genius, but I think we can do a whole lot better than what we're doing. And I think that looking at Metro Mobility and creating some software where they can actually maximize the number of individuals, because oftentimes those are single person in a single ride, that could have an impact. And the cost in some ways can be a burden. You know, for some members it ends up being like $375 each way. And when you're on fixed income and you're someone of low wealth, that can be an obstacle. So working towards those. And I also think about our winters. I mean, we've all talked about the winters, and I think about the system that we have in place that, you know, you as a homeowner, you're required to shovel your walk. And it's great that we're addressing the issue of street corners and bus shelters, which we have to do. But sometimes individuals don't shovel their walk for a day, sometimes 2 days, someday 3 days. It's gotten warm out, all of a sudden that plot of land in between a couple of houses, that sidewalk becomes impassable. I've talked to Councilmember Andrew Johnson, who talks a lot about Albany, New York, or Buffalo, New York, where they actually shovel the streets as part of the services for the city. And it's actually at a reasonable cost to residents, about $30 a year. So I think we should begin to look at that, and is that something that we should provide as a city service along with like garbage pickup and things like that.
Thank you very much. We'll come back to this topic. No one seems to answer the driverless cars, but that's okay.
About what?
I'll hit that.
Metro Transit is our next question. And we have these people right over there. Metro Transit has plans to add rapid bus lines on certain busy streets and busy bus routes. The first opened last year on Snelling Avenue in St. Paul as an example, but most of these lines are not funded today. The city is pursuing a streetcar on Nicholas, a couple of you have mentioned, and Central Avenue. The funding and regional support is not yet been finalized. So the question is, we know that transportation is necessary. There have been a number of recent controversial projects. The question is, how would you bring competing opinions into your shared vision that you outlined with our first question for the city?
Well, the good news is there actually are more arterial bus rapid transit, which is what it's called, along places like Penn and other parts of the region. And for those of you who don't know, it's a bus that stops about every quarter to a third of a mile versus every other block. So it's for those individuals that are going from one spot to another spot, oftentimes larger areas to the center city. And the great thing about Snelling is it actually, you know, goes down Snelling and then it crosses over to Minneapolis and connects up with the LRT. So those are the types of things that we need to have so that people can have quicker access to the LRT if they don't live within that area. You know, you'd mentioned Nicollet as far as streetcar and Central Avenue. Actually, Broadway Avenue is also being considered at this time for a streetcar. And the thing that when I think about the future of our city and I think about the role of LRT and I think about the role of streetcars, there's also that role that you had mentioned, driverless cars. We're not there yet. I think we're probably a decade to 15 years from now. But I actually think that that's part of that piece about getting people in that last few blocks from where they need to go. And I envision a future that will probably have a few different methods of driverless cars. One will be a subscription service. One will be people that actually own driverless cars, and it drops them off at work, and then they have their car driving around, earning income, and then at the end of the day, it comes and picks them up, and it takes them to their home. And lastly, I believe that driverless cars will become part of that last area that people need to travel from whatever their public transportation system is that will then take them from the streetcar or from the LRT to their house. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that are going to be changing in the near future, and when we prioritize, I believe we need to consider all of these things that are going to be changing very rapidly for us in the next few years.
Thank you very much. We're talking about different opinions and convergent opinions. So, Jacob, how would you bring competing opinions into your shared vision for the city that you outlined in our first question?
Well, you'll have competing opinions, I think, no matter what decision you're ultimately making. And I'll talk specifically about a combination of streetcar as well as autonomous vehicles. And, you know, the Nicollet Avenue streetcar was something that I supported 4 years ago. I thought it was a good idea, not so much for transportation reasons, because there's not a significant difference between BRT or just a bus line and having a staggered streetcar. But it was really for economic development purposes. But in the interim, the areas in which the streetcar is being placed are already substantially, and there's a ton of economic development on them, whether it's Nicollet through downtown, certainly on East Hennepin. I mean, the area is booming right now. Now, the area that doesn't have it is as you go further up Central Avenue, and as of right now, the streetcar plans only go a couple of blocks up and then turn around. And if that's the case, I don't think that there is economic development merit in having the streetcar. And we've got a value capture model that is pooling a significant amount of money every year to put into the streetcar fund, and I do think that it would be better used elsewhere. You know, I mentioned that we should be pushing for BRT, and there's a question as to how the money can transfer, but BRT is something that I think we need to be focusing on. Also on autonomous vehicles. You know, whether we like it or not, autonomous vehicles are funding and are coming, and we can do it well or we can do it poorly. What I'm specifically excited about the potential for is combining one fully autonomous vehicles with ride sharing, which, by the way, I was the author of. It was a difficult and complex ordinance, but I think it was the right thing to do, with electric. Because then you've got kind of this trifecta where you can ensure environmental sustainability, and you can dramatically reduce the area that's required for parking, because that fully autonomous vehicle can pick you up at your home, drop you off somewhere else, and then it doesn't need to park. And so if we think about the public realm improvements that are behind that, they can be substantial. And we need to be planning this now, though, because this fully autonomous vehicles, it could go well, it could go horribly, though. It could go horribly and basically alienate people of lower incomes from access to public transportation. Fully autonomous vehicles are not a replacement to public transportation. They're an asset for public transportation and getting to that first and last mile. So this is something that we need to be planning for like yesterday, because there could be dramatic impacts on how we ultimately sort and plan for our city.
Thank you very much, Tom. The question goes to you. There have been a number of recent projects. How would you bring these competing opinions into your shared vision for the city that you've already outlined?
I think that's a really good question. And I will tell you the first thing I'll do is I'll listen. I'll make sure that I reach out to as many groups and individuals as I can and that I have a system set up so that I can really listen to what people are saying to me, because that is the point of the conversation, is to hear what people say. And ultimately, once we take all that information in, we'll need to make a decision. But before we, you know, I thought that part of the question was about these competing priorities. And let me just say that, you know, the place I would start, you know, certainly with buses that are currently on the streets, is to make sure that they're operating as well as they can. You know, are the signals synchronized? You know, do we have vehicles taking priority, individual vehicles taking priority over buses? Do we have vehicles blocking intersections so that they delay the travel time? Because if we do, we haven't really maximized the system that we have in place. And we want to make sure that we do that, because that's how we're going to improve ridership. If people are delayed in sitting in a bus because it takes them 32 minutes to get to a certain location, when if they were in a car, it would take them 12, well, we're not going to be successful. But if we can cut the travel time and make it more efficient, demonstrate for people what the value is, then we're going to be creating the kind of ridership and the kind of support that we really want, and we're not going to just leave that system and go running after another one without making sure that this one is operating as best it can. And when we do that, I think we actually grow support for the next thing we want to do. And I can't tell you sitting here today whether it should be a streetcar or whether it should be BRT. I would actually have to listen to all of you and a number of other people to make sure I understood what you felt the pros and cons were, so that once again, as that project is implemented, you don't feel that something's being done to you, that you feel that it's being done for you.
Thank you very much, Mayor. This question goes to you. We know that transportation isn't easy. There's a number of controversial projects. How would you bring these competing opinions into your shared vision?
Part of the way to bring competing opinions into a vision is to plan toward that vision, so everybody can come to the table and have a say in what the plan is for the future. And in my proposal for the 2018 budget, I proposed $250,000 for a refresh on the 10-year-old Access Minneapolis Transit and Transportation Plan for Minneapolis. And when Councilmember Lilligren, Councilmember Glidden, and I proposed and supported $1 million for the first Access Minneapolis plan 10 years ago, the cynics were all, you know, they were just so negative about it. No, this shouldn't happen. You don't have any money to plan, you know, you don't have any money to fund that plan. So why are you going to spend $1 million on a plan that you don't have any money for? Well, we have a $183 million return on that particular investment, because without Access Minneapolis, if you don't plan, people don't like to invest in ideas. They like to invest in plans. And so we got the $33 million for Marquette and 2nd downtown to make bus travel easier. We got $150 million for the bus rapid transit and the new and accessible station at Lake Street. That's $183 million return on investment. And that plan brought all kinds of people to the table to say, what are our priorities for transit and transportation in Minneapolis, and how are we going to move forward together? And I propose we refresh that plan moving forward. And I'll just say a couple things about streetcars. Councilmember Fry, and I'm grateful for this, supported the West Broadway streetcar when it came before the committee for North Minneapolis, when it was a choice between streetcar and bus rapid transit. Because, yes, streetcars are great for creating economic growth and development. But the West Broadway streetcar depends on a successful Nicollet streetcar, because you have to put the first one where you know it will be successful, you know you have ridership, or people won't invest in a second line. And so we need that Nicollet streetcar line to be successful in the first order so that we can have success on West Broadway, where we're not having the same kind of development that he refers to in other parts of the city. And so we do have that vision. Now, the tool that we have at the city, the Value Capture District tool, we just use that to buy the land under Kmart. When we get to open up Lake Street at Nicollet at Lake Street, when we get to open that up, that's going to be good for bus riders all across the city, regardless of the future of the streetcar right there. So this kind of planning, this kind of coming together, this kind of being smart in our transit plan, that is the style that I have brought in my time as mayor and council member.
Let's go to, you mentioned North Minneapolis. Let's go to a question about equity. For lower wealth individuals, transportation can be the largest household cost. Mass transit is an important resource for North Minneapolis residents in particular. You mentioned West Broadway. But according to a recent census data, 27% of households in the area don't own a car, compared to 18% of households in Minneapolis as a poll, according to Inside News. Minneapolis has a strong, Minneapolis goes along with the worst racial disparities in the country for a number of outcomes. How can transportation improve equity and address historic imbalances in economic investment and opportunity? And there's a follow-up question to that. Yeah.
The biggest challenge facing the city of Minneapolis is that we have the biggest gaps between white people and people of color of any city in the country on pretty much every measure that you care to name. And we have made some progress in recent years. There's some data from the Met Council that is encouraging that we're starting to move in the right direction, particularly when it comes to workforce. But what I've been up to for the last 4 years is a transformation of our systems as a city enterprise and as a city, as a community, to change our DNA when we think about issues regarding race. And that has been true when it's come to transit and transportation and development in North Minneapolis, in Central Minneapolis, in Phillips, all throughout the city, in places where people are doing well and where places where people are struggling. And we see that the build-out of our infrastructure, just in terms of our streets, that the most rapid growth in use of our cycling infrastructure and our pedestrian infrastructure, the largest growth is coming from Latino communities, African American, and indigenous populations. Because making sure we have facilities that work for everybody means everybody can use them. And it means we cut transit costs and we increase access to jobs. But active transit is not the only solution that we can or should have at hand. That is why I've worked so hard to advocate for transit options and solutions at the regional level, at the state level, and at the federal level, so that we can build out our light rail lines, so that we can build out our transit networks, so we get the funding we need for buses, let alone for our successful light rail lines and the future of that. That is the best thing that we can do. But some of the decisions about where the light rail lines go were made under a Bush administration who was only concerned with getting suburban riders as quickly to downtown Minneapolis as possible and did not care about density and did not care about the, you know, the people who were using transit most or most transit dependent. So we did our best to make the best of a bad situation. For example, with Southwest LRT fighting very hard, if they were going to do co-location, if they're going to do that alignment, I fought hard to get $30 million worth of investment and commitments from Metro Transit to have bus connectivity from North Minneapolis to Bottineau, to Southwest LRT, and then to Bottineau as well. That sort of leadership, yes, we all have to work together, but there are times and places where you have to stand up and take a stand for people and refuse to back down. And doing that on Southwest LRT meant that we got $30 million worth of investment in economic development and access to people in North Minneapolis and other parts of the city.
A follow-up question to that, studies indicate that in North Minneapolis on West Broadway, that a rail system of some type is coming down Broadway. What can be done to prevent the city from tearing up the north side, as was done to the Rodwell neighborhood when I-94 came through?
Well, we want to make sure that the people who help, I want to make sure, that the people who help make a neighborhood great get to benefit from the investments in their neighborhood when they come. So that's an issue of gentrification and displacement in housing and commercial properties overall. But this question is a concern about if you have rail coming down West Broadway, and right now the only plan for rail is a streetcar. The advantage of that is that you do not have to displace people to build that. You use the infrastructure that you have, and that's one of the advantages of a streetcar is it's in traffic. It's on the streets in with other traffic. You know, what happened with the highways, tragically here and around the country, was that they had to bulldoze people's homes, they had to destroy entire neighborhoods to build a highway. And what the advantage of the proposals that we have for West Broadway and other parts of town is that they use the infrastructure that we have. You may have to reconfigure it in some ways. Yes, there would be a construction season or two or three. There would be construction seasons, but you wouldn't have to have the kind of mass displacement that was shown with the highways.
Very much. So I have a question goes to you, and I'll abbreviate it to the audience. Minneapolis has among the worst racial disparities in the country for a number of outcomes. The question is, how can transportation policy improve equity and address historic imbalances in economic investment and opportunity?
Got it. That's a great question, and you know, the issue of racial inequity has actually not improved over the last 4 years. It's only gotten worse. So we should be concerned about exactly where, how we're going to move the dial on that. When we think about the impact of transportation, we really need to think about who's bearing the burden, who's bearing the benefits, who's, what is the long-term plan? What's the opportunity for economic activity, both now and in the future? Because when we start thinking about that, then we start thinking about fairness and we think about equity through that lens of whose benefits and where the burden's sitting. Now, I'm not really sure what the process is going to be, but one might think that perhaps if we, you know, if a streetcar line is desirable for West Broadway, it might be more important to have that there than on Niblett Mall to begin with. And I suspect that the question about disruption is probably a reflection of how long it has taken to get Niblett Mall completed and how would businesses survive if they were faced with that kind of disruption. But I will tell you, the first thing I would do relative to the economic activity on West Broadway, and I have talked with a lot of residents about this, is first of all, focus on inclusive development. But the other thing we need to do is make sure that it feels safe. The people there need to feel safe. They need to know that their neighborhood is safe, and they need to have a good relationship with the Minneapolis Police Department, because businesses can't thrive in an environment that does not feel or is not actually safe. And that would be the first thing I would do, is make sure the neighborhood is feeling safe.
The follow-up question, the same as we get from Mayor Betsy Hodge, is there's talk that a rail system of some type is coming down Broadway in the near future. What can you do to prevent that community from being torn apart, as was done when the Rondo neighborhood was separated with the construction of I-94?
Well, A, we just can't let that happen. I mean, we're going to, you know, any construction that happens is not going to displace people. And I think, as the mayor was suggesting, you know, what we're talking about is you know, inclusive development. What we want to do is make sure that as we go through this process, that individuals who have been there continue to be there and are supported throughout, and that they are there after the project is completed, so that they're assured of receiving the benefits. I mean, that's a, you know, this is another variation of what I was saying before, is, you know, benefits and burdens. You know, who benefits and who's burdened, and we want to make sure that those individuals who are there right now are benefited.
Jacob, the question goes back to you. You were talking about racial disparities in your reporting, the Insight News from 2014. Minneapolis has among the worst racial disparities in the country for a number of outcomes. What can transportation policy do to improve equity and address historic imbalances in economic and investment opportunity?
Well, we do have some of the largest racial inequities in the entire country. The largest. We also are amongst the most segregated cities in the entire country, and this was done intentionally. You know, if we look at what's happened, whether it's intentional segregation, redlining, restrictive covenants that run with the land, putting all the heavy industrial and polluting entities right next to some of the lowest income neighborhoods in the entire city, or a massive highway, which, by the way, in Minneapolis separates North Minneapolis from one of its most vital assets, which is the Central Riverfront there, or the Northern Riverfront. And similarly, this, the same exact thing happened in Rondo, but it was a community that was divided between itself. And these decisions were made intentionally. We can push back on these decisions in the future, and as light rail is built out in North Minneapolis, it doesn't need to be built on a massive viaduct that divides one community from itself. We can plan it so that the design is incorporated by thinking about people, how people move, how they interact, how communities can absorb what can be, I think, a massive benefit if it's done right. And we can ultimately get there. We also need to be thinking about how the communities get to home and get to work. I heard a statistic just the other day that said that the number one reason that students at MCTC can no longer afford the education is actually not the tuition itself, which is somewhere around $5,000 for 30 credits. Instead, it's bus fare. That was the number one reason that people dropped out of school. And for especially for people that are looking at enhancing their life and improving their mind to get a great job, I mean, that's just flat out sad. And so as we make these decisions going forward, and as we look at how rail can be incorporated on Broadway, and by the way, streetcar can be incorporated on Broadway regardless of the nickel. I actually asked the question right before the vote. We can be planning ahead.
Do you want a follow-up question, or is that your answer to your famous advice?
What was the follow-up question again?
The follow-up question was that there is a study that says that there will be some type of rail system coming down West Broadway.
Oh, right.
The question is, what can be done not to tear apart work in the Amazon fashion that happened to Rondell with the construction of I-94?
Well, this is a question about gentrification. And whenever I talk about gentrification, I first need to define what it is, because a lot of people have different perspectives. The way I define it, this is not necessarily the right one, but the way I define it is the displacement of cultures and communities that have made these neighborhoods wonderful to begin with. So the goal is not to keep values down. The goal is to keep these communities that have made these neighborhoods wonderful able to continue to live there. And so, yes, I think it makes a lot of sense to invest on areas like West Broadway. Yes, we want the area to be successful and to thrive, and we even are fine with value increases. But what we need to be thinking very critically about is how we retain the affordable housing stock within the neighborhood, and the city has a very significant role to play there. We can make sure that we're bridging that gap between whatever constitutes the market rate and the affordable rate so that people aren't getting the boot on a very constant basis, and that's happening right now.
All right. We'll have a cap to have another session on housing and talk about that.
Sure.
We've had a few forums.
We've had a few, yeah. Number 32, is it now?
So, right now, with Minneapolis, the question is, Minneapolis has had the worst racial disparities in the country.
You don't have to go on.
Yeah, I've
got that. Yeah. So one
it's
thing.
My job, sir.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. I want you to do your job, and you're doing it well, by the way. I love it. Thank you. Let's give him a hand. I hope that didn't cut into my time. It's really interesting when we think, and the statistics you pointed out is amazing. I mean, 27% of the households in the area of North Minneapolis don't own a car. And that's not really out of choice. And it's being compared to the 18% overall that many individuals are not owning a car out of choice. So this isn't even an apples-to-apples comparison. This is one of those things that we have a transit-dependent folks in our community, and we need to do everything we can to give them access to good, safe, affordable, reliable transportation. You know, studies have shown that the thing that lifts people out of poverty isn't education. It's actually transportation. Access to good, reliable transportation is the number one thing that actually creates the opportunities for people to move out of poverty. I mean, education is important, but it has shown to be transportation. And, Councilmember Fry mentioned the importance about affordable housing and that our transportation system should be designed around to give people access to that. When I think about low-wage workers, and I think about, how we always get accused at the Capitol of subsidizing, all these people that ride the buses. And by the way, in areas like North Minneapolis, the fare box capture is some of the highest in the system. So actually, they're actually paying for their buses. It's other places like Plymouth Transit or Maple Grove Transit that we're actually paying a huge part of that as subsidies. But it's really those employers that pay low wages that I believe we're subsidizing. And I think that we should actually look at the city level about what they've done similar to the high school students and figuring out if there's a way that for those individuals that are low-wage workers, that they actually have a way that we as a city can supplement their fares so it's not costing them as much of their income as it currently is.
Care to address since you're taking control here?
Sure.
of gentrification.
Yeah, so West Broadway is an interesting part of the city. I live about a block and a half from Capri Theater. It's been my home for the last 20 years. And there's been a lot of work about trying to get things right in North Minneapolis. One of the reasons why I believe that the preferred route of transit was the streetcar is because of the economic development. But also because it's time that we think about North Minneapolis in the same way we think about other parts of the city, and that they should have access to the good things. Because for far too long, we have denied them those opportunities in North Minneapolis. I'm the fourth generation of my family who live on the north side of Minneapolis. It's a place that, in the part of the city, has incredible people that try really, really hard every day, and yet we put obstacles in their way every day. And somehow we magically think that they're going to be able to, you know, lead productive lives. So the thing that we really need to think hard about West Broadway is not only the residents, but the shopkeepers. When we put in the Green Line to St. Paul, many, many businesses ended up being displaced because they could not burden that long period of time of reduction in business. And the same thing has happened in some areas of Nicollet Mall. I think the city has a responsibility, the region has a responsibility, that when we disrupt businesses, we need to make sure that those businesses that shoulder that responsibility are able to be in place when they'll actually begin to thrive because of the new transit system we put in place. So that's my thoughts around Broadway.
Okay. Last question before we go to your final statement. Raymond, given the present transit picture in Minneapolis, is the city ready to host an Amazon headquarters and connect all areas of the community?
Oh. No.
No, I don't think we're there yet. We have a lot of work that needs to be done in terms of infrastructure improvement. If we're talking about receiving $40 billion worth of investment and 40,000 jobs, but it's not like that work is insurmountable. I do think that Minneapolis should be a city that is attracting significant entities like Amazon. I mean, you know, we always talk about creating a pipeline for jobs for North Minneapolis. Well, this is an excellent opportunity to do so on the Upper Harbor Terminal. We could have the vocational training, the coding expertise necessary for individuals to move directly into a high-paying job. And yes, there are transportation outlays that need to be made along the way, but I do think that we can get there. So, no, but we can get there.
All right.
What was the question?
The question is, given the present transportation picture in Minneapolis, is the city ready to host an Amazon headquarters?
Well, and that's in part up to Amazon, but, you know, I suspect the answer is no. But let me, you may not have seen this, but, you know, with all of the media attention around Amazon's decision, the Boston Globe had a really interesting piece, and it was put together by their economic development people. And you opened it up, and it said, Amazon, come to us. And then what it had was a series of all the challenges that they have in their community and how Amazon could help fix them. I thought it was a really great way of approaching it because when I've been asked, you know, how do you feel about Amazon? And I'm like, well, I'm not interested, and I don't think anybody up here is interested in just writing a blank check. We have, if you know, we're going to do something with Amazon, we have significant issues here that need to be addressed. But I thought laying out, here are all of the issues that we have, and you could help us solve all of them, was a really clever way of approaching it and integrating them into the solution conversation. But as we are today, probably not.
Very obvious, given the present transportation picture, where Minneapolis is the city ready to host an Amazon-like headquarters?
I think there are very few cities in the country that are ready right now to host an Amazon headquarters. That doesn't mean that cities all across the country aren't making that application. The question is, are we able to put a plan together that would allow us to accommodate that kind of growth in that rapid of a time frame? And I think the answer is yes, because we've been able to put plans together to accommodate the growth that we're experiencing now. We have a vision for the future. Now, that's a separate question from whether or not it makes sense for us as a community for Amazon to be here or what application we're going to be put forward for Amazon. But what I will say is the application process itself is an opportunity for us as a city and as a region to showcase how awesome we are and how great we are and what a great investment we are for anybody looking to site a new company or to expand here. That's the opportunity of this application process, is to showcase the best of us as a community, because we do have so much to offer, including not just the transit we've been able to build out so far, but our ability to work together to build out our transit system for the future.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we've gone through our list of questions, and now we're going to go to a portion where we'll ask our candidates for mayor to outline in 90 seconds your vision, once again, for those who just joined us, your vision for the city with regard to transportation, or what your final message would be for our citizenry. Mayor Cooper.
Well, I think my final message is I've been a really great mayor, and I will continue to be a really great mayor, and I ask for your first choice vote. But when it comes to these issues, as I said at the beginning, today was an opportunity to take a look out for rhetoric versus results. There can be a lot of rhetoric and a lot of here's what I would do or here are the values that I bring, and certainly that's important. But what I also brought to the table today and what I offer you is actual results when it comes to thinking about transit and transportation and human beings and our growth and development here in the city of Minneapolis. I have led this work. I have taken tough stands for this work. And I have built coalitions around this work so we could move forward on a shared vision of our prosperity through transit. So it's cycling infrastructure. It's the transit we've built out, whether it's light rail lines and the future of those, whether it is BRT and the future of that. It's our active transit, building out for cycling, building out for pedestrians. We're on the cusp of a revolution in street design in the city of Minneapolis with our transportation planning division, with Robin Hutchison as our new public works director, who has that vision and has made that real herself, with the investment in the 20-year Parks and Streets investment plan that we'll be building out to our complete streets policy, which is a huge, huge victory. And I give a lot of credit to Councilmember Bender and Councilmember Reich, who you know, we work together to move that forward. But I also have a vision for the future, 2018. I've invested in Vision Zero, making sure that we are reducing fatalities for everyone, including our most vulnerable, who are cyclists and pedestrians. Investment in Access Minneapolis, so we can have the next stage of planning for transit and attract that kind of investment as we go. There's been talk about streetcars today. With President Trump, there's very little that's going to happen on any kind of transit at the federal level at all, whether it be light rail or streetcars or any kind of support for transit. And we have that gridlock at the state level. Next year's elections are incredibly important. But what we do in Minneapolis really well is we make sure we're ready for that future when it comes, so that when the opportunities come, we're ready with our own resources that we can put to the table to leverage future investment and a plan about who we are and where we're going. I've helped lead all of that work. So I'll conclude where I started. I've been doing a great job as mayor. I'm going to do a great job for another 4 years. I ask for your first choice vote.
Thank you. Well, thank you again to all the sponsoring organizations for having me here today. I will tell you, the surprise question was one on Amazon for this group. I didn't expect I'd hear that at all, but a fascinating conversation. So let me tell you a little bit about myself and why I think I'm the right person to be in the mayor's office. I'm a lifelong resident. I graduated from Washburn High School. I then became a school teacher for Minneapolis Public Schools. I'm the only person in this race who's actually been on the ground teaching school, understanding what kids need to be successful. I then put myself through law school, but I was really interested in what was going on at the city. And so I found myself working at the city and working on as a project manager to save some historic theaters. I did that. I worked on the State Theater and saved it and got it up and running. I worked on the Orpheum Theater, saved it, and got it up and running. I then went to the Public Housing Authority, where I served as the Deputy Executive Director. So I'm the only person in this race who's actually overseeing a large-scale affordable housing program. When I got there, the Housing Authority was getting ready to be taken over by HUD, but pulling together a team of people, we worked to save that, to turn it around, and have it designated as a high-performing housing authority, the highest designation one can get from HUD. Then again, working with a team of people, we resolved some massive litigation that alleged the racial discrimination related to the original site in public housing on the near north side of Minneapolis. And when I said, they're right, the plaintiffs are right, I opened the door for us to bring $100 million to the city of Minneapolis to begin to address some of the vestiges of that race discrimination. What you see today is Heritage Park on the near north side. I then returned to the theaters and helped save the Pantages Theater and formed Hennepin Theater Trust, the nonprofit that owns and operates those three theaters now, bringing 500,000 people to downtown Minneapolis every year and creating and supporting hundreds and thousands of good jobs in our city, bringing back vitality to the city. Those are the things that I've done to help make our city a much better place. When I look to the future, I get excited because you know what? I get to think about being the education mayor. I get to think about really honing in and working with the school board to make a big difference in our kids' lives because the kids of our city are also the responsibility of the mayor. I think about creating great jobs, not just now, but in the future to make sure we have the kind of economy that we really want. We're growing the kinds of jobs that we want. I look forward to a police department that works for the people, not against the people. And I look forward to creating more affordable housing so that everyone can have a place to call home in our city. I ask for your first place vote on November 7th, and thank you so much for being here today.
Well, I fell in love with Minneapolis while running the Twin Cities Marathon. Somewhere around Nokomis, I remember the guy that I was running with turned to me and said, "The city is absolutely spectacular. It was a city in a park. It was a city that had pedestrian improvements, but there was still improvement that could be made. And I'm running for mayor because, you know, my future is here. I want to start a family here, and I want to make sure that every bit of potential here in the city is realized. But to get there, it's not about rhetoric and catchphrases. Of course, everybody wants to listen. Everybody wants to hear what the public has to say. But at a certain point, you do need to make a decision and be clear about what your plan is. And when I ran for office for city council, we had very specific things that we promised. We promised growth and density, and we delivered it at record levels. We promised affordable housing in middle and upper income areas along the Central Riverfront. And it happened. We promised a new community-based public school, and we worked with invested parents and the school board, and now one is open. We promised near record numbers of small and local businesses opening. That happened too. And so at the end of the day, it's not about what you talk about, it's not about what you promise, it's what you're able to deliver, and we have. And so, you know, I challenge us all to take a look at what's happened. You know, take a look at what's happened in North Loop. These were not easy decisions that were made to move away from the status quo in planning decisions. Take a look at what's happening on East Hennepin. It is working. It is working. And ultimately, you need a mayor that's able to build out the coalition, pitch the clear vision, and then get the job done. And so I challenge us all to just imagine. Imagine a city where true community policing is more than just a catchphrase. Imagine a city where diverse neighborhoods is actually a reality. Now imagine a mayor that's able to pitch the clear vision and build out the coalition to make it happen. So I would be honored to be your first choice as mayor. If not your first choice, I'd be honored to have your second choice. And you can always get a hold of me by contacting me on my cell phone, which I regularly give out. It's 612-968-4443. Thanks so much to the hosts and to the sponsors, and I think this was actually an awesome debate because we got some real specifics from a whole lot of people.
And last but not least, we're
going to do. Well, I get to wrap up. So, again, thank all of you for coming out. Those of you who may not be familiar with me, I'm a third-term state representative. I've been representing most of downtown Minneapolis, the southern part of North Minneapolis, and that area in between, as well as pieces of Bryn Mawr and Elliott Park. So the district I represent is a good cross-section of what we have in the city of Minneapolis. In my district, I have people that wake up every morning and don't want for anything, and I have people that wake up every morning figuring out how they're going to get through the day. And I've had the opportunity of serving that district for some time now. You know, as a state legislator, I've been able to bring things to the city of Minneapolis. I probably brought over $200 million for roads, bridges, and bike lanes to the city of Minneapolis in the time that I've been there. But what I want to talk about is my involvement before I ran for office. When the mortgage foreclosure crisis hit the north side, I, along with other neighbors, we knocked on doors to let our people that lived in our area that their house was in a difficult place and that they may be foreclosed on, and tried to connect them to services so that they didn't lose their homes. In 2010, I stood with the community, families, kids, and even some teachers to try to make sure that we kept North High open. The public school system was going to close North High in 2010. And because we stood up and fought, it was able to stay open. And last year, they graduated 90% of the people in the senior class. So there are successes that happen. And in 2011, when the tornado hit North Minneapolis, I brought together over 70 people from the design community, and we provided we provided pro bono services to over 35 homeowners on the north side. So I've been doing this work, and as someone trained in practicing architecture for quite some time, I've studied transit, I've studied how it intersects, and those are the types of things that when I think about the city, I think about how our different systems intersect. Transit is one piece of it. There's several other. And where those intersections are really, really critical. I would ask on November 7th for your first choice vote. And like all of us, we'd be happy with your second choice vote. And I hope that you actually get out and
thanks for listening to the Streets MN podcast. If you're interested in joining the conversation about Minnesota's transportation and use, direct your browser to streets.mn. Content for Streets MN is volunteer-driven, and the views reflected on our site are strictly those of each individual author. Together, we can create an engaged and informed community.
We've heard many viewpoints today, and now the decision is yours.
Vote for Captain Jack Sparrow, funny name, real cute.
Thank you very much. And noon on November 5th, between noon on November 5th, for 2 hours, you'll hear this panel on the station that I just happen to represent, KMLJ. Given the commercials we've heard today, please tune in, and thank you for your participation.